You watch those nature documentaries on the cable?
Yeah.
You see the one about lions?
Yeah.
Look at this lion. He's the king of the jungle. Huge mane out there. He's laying down under a tree in the middle of Africa. He's so big. He's so hot. He doesn't want to move. Now, the little lion comes. They start messing with him. Biting his tail, biting his ears. He doesn't do anything. The lioness, she starts messing with him. Coming over, making trouble. Still, nothing. Now, the other animals, they notice this. And they start to move in. The jackals. Hyenas. They're barking at him, laughing at him. They nip his toes and eat the food that's in his domain. They do this, and they get closer and closer and bolder, till one day, that lion gets up and tears the shit out of everybody, runs like the wind, eats everything in his path. Because every once in a while, the lion has to show the jackals who he is.
And that is your lone wolf moral for today. I'll try to have one almost every day for you if I can. Terrible Tommy here. And we're at P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. Just make your mail to Tom Metzger. And that's where the donations go, and that's where all your letters go. Well, boys and girls, I got rid of that head cold, and I finally did, but I think I owe it all to vitamin C. I take a teaspoonful of vitamin C every 2 hours. That seemed to fix me up real good, so I'm back in the saddle again. I love the way they lie, and they love how they lie. The recent growth in political extremism online has resulted in increased public pressure for greater internet regulation, and you know that is bullshit. It's pressure groups and so-called radical Bolshevik type groups, radical capitalist type groups. It's not the general public, because the general public don't, whether they don't care or not, or they're too lazy, they don't really care. As corporations and governments start to respond to the demand of these special to the public, more voices are demanding a thorough debate. In other words, take everything down. Interesting about monuments and tearing monuments down. I see over the weekend a video of a giant war memorial to the Soviet troops that died in Poland was taken down, crushed, and hauled away. That's going on all over the place now. I want to tell you something. You should have mixed emotions about this, because 20 million Russians died in that Second World War, far more than anything that happened in the West. Yeah, and 400,000 troops died in Poland alone. And I think it's fitting that they did have a memorial to those troops. I'm not supporting their leaders or Stalin or anything like that. But tearing down the statue of, dedicated to 400,000 men who died retrieving Poland, even though, it, of course, it went under communism and that wasn't good, but going under capitalism is not a hell of a lot better, except for the goodies. But they're doing this all over the world. They're destroying history. Yeah, this is right out of Soviet Principle 10, you know. We got to obliterate any memory of anything, you know. So anyhow, you boys that are worried about Robert E. Lee, well, the Russians got their problems too. Well, the removal of the neo-Nazi publication, the Daily Stürmer, from the web following the violence at the neo-Nazi march in Charlottesville, which probably only about 10% were actually Nazis, or even Hollywood Nazis, last month has ignited a fierce debate about internet censorship. The highly inflammatory publication, whose name is a play on the German Nazi Party's tabloid newspaper, Der Stürmer, which incidentally was frowned upon by most National Socialists in Germany. A lot of you people don't know that. That was, what was his name? He was the mayor of Nuremberg. Hitler tolerated him, but he didn't think much of him. It was judged to have overstepped the mark in the aftermath of the Charlottesville when it published an article mocking and abusing Heather Heyer, who was killed by a car attack directed at counter-protesters to the far-right rally. Well, I agree that was going too far. Very much too far, making statements about maybe it was good that she got killed or whatever. If anything, that may very well have been a federal informant or provocateur that was driving that car. I don't go along with supporting that kind of stuff. Number one, it's counterproductive. Even if you want to think it, that's a different story. But that does not support the racial cause. And I think a lot of these right-wing groups like that do more harm to the racial cause than anything else. Now, I'm not against radical. Of course, you know I'm radical enough. But there's some things that help the enemy more than they help you. So that kind of stuff is the excuse. Now, we know it's an excuse to use to shut down dozens of other websites who have been quietly doing their thing for years. Ours was going on for over 10 years with the same company. But they got the word from the top to shut us down. But we're back up. We've got it all. I believe it's totally, completely back up today. So we'll see what happens now. Within hours, GoDaddy, a web hosting company, cut ties with the website, forcing it to find another host. Google and other web companies, including Cloudflare and Zoho, soon followed. This left the site with nowhere to go but the so-called dark web. Well, we didn't have to go to the dark web, so I think that was a little extreme move. But anyhow, I'm not a supporter of that particular website due to a lot of its content. This making Hitler still the super great guy and all that kind of stuff. And I've studied Hitler from one side to the other. And I've pretty well come to conclusions on that situation. And I'm not going to be promoting a lot of the things that Hitler did. I will give him credit for things that I think he did do well, but not the things that he did very badly and resulted in the death of millions of white people. With a lot of help from these other big shots like Stalin and Churchill and all of those people. I hate to be picky, but I saw the picture of the guy that runs that website, the Stürmer, and I don't think he would have been able to get in the SS, to put it lightly. Of course, this clampdown on websites, it's a one-way street. The neo-Bolsheviks don't seem to have that problem, because this is all coming out of Silicon Valley and Hollywood and all that stuff. These people who have the so-called progressive religion, fanatics. They're as bad as Oral Moral Roberts and these other crazy-ass preachers. And to be calling it extremism, that's their excuse. Well, I think progressive, so-called progressivism, which is really a terrible term, is not very progressive. And I think it's extreme, its ideas and it's what it would like to do is very extreme. But it's only looked at, extremism is only looked at from one position. Now, of course, you got the right wing, the left wing, the middle wing, and many other wings in this country, not just one or two. Yes, there was one woman died, and it's very lucky there weren't a hell of a lot more that died. But nobody would have had to die if the police had done their job. And I'm not hearing hardly any pushback there. The cops literally left their post. And that's now in Boston later, the next week, you didn't have that problem because the police did their job in a riot. It could be a riotous situation. You know, I don't agree with involving yourself in those kind of things at all. I don't think they prove anything. I don't think they change anything. And that's my opinion. Let's just put it this way. Bob Matthews didn't set up rallies. He just got the job done. You know, another thing that really pisses me off is they keep bringing up Timothy McVeigh as a white racist. Timothy McVeigh consorted with Filipino women. His brother was engaged or married to a Filipino broad, and so forth. So how does that make him a white racist? Now in Germany, discussion has focused more on government rather than corporate censorship, with much controversy surrounding the Interior Ministry's decision on August 25th to ban the far left website, Indie Media. The decision, which came in the wake of a law passed in June that allows German government to fine social media companies for failing to remove hate speech within 24 hours of receiving notification, signifies the greater willingness of governments to interfere with the internet, interfere with free speech. Now, they're going to do everything they can to get rid of free speech using any excuse they can. Don't you understand that? It's not whose speech it is or how hateful the speech is or how loving the speech is. It's we don't want the public or the working class or anybody like that having a say. Stay home and watch our television channels. We'll tell you what's going on and that's it. That's why I'm on record for decades of always supporting total, open, free speech. No one will ever have a problem with from me for free speech, no matter how much I hate their speech. This legislation has set a new standard for online regulation, said Heidi Burick, an expert on extremism at the Southern Poverty Law Center. She thinks that governments across Europe will probably follow Germany in clamping down on extremist content on the web. The Southern Poverty Law Center that's stashed millions offshore in the Caribbean to avoid taxes, probably. But I tracked that down in the 70s, I told you before. I tracked all this down. It's called the Southern, what did I call it? The Southern Fund. Southern Fund, I think that was the name. That was what the Southern Poverty Law Center was putting its money into there in Montgomery, Alabama. Nobody gave a shit. They just kept going on making millions and millions more dollars off the suckers and the little old ladies. And even though there's a lot of fire around and people being pissed off and yelling and screaming about it, I don't think Morris is going to get hurt at all. He's got enough people in high places, social bureaucrat people to protect him, I don't think he's going to get hurt at all. Though the rise and fall of the Nazi Party took place, well, the National Socialist Workers' Party, took place in Germany, Nazi ideology is alive and well in the United States. Not really, because there isn't one so-called Hollywood Nazi in 100 that has studied deeply National Socialism. It was a very complicated system and very revealing, but you got to really study to really know what National Socialism was, what it was meant to be. And most of these people in the Hollywood Nazis, the most they've done is read Mein Kampf, which was not that good a book. Sorry, it wasn't. You have to go into the National Socialist books prior to Mein Kampf to get a better view of what National Socialism really was supposed to be. And it was not supposed to be involved in waging war. Number one, if I had been living at that time, I would have not done well in Germany under Hitler. Because I'm not a person who clicks his heels and joins in a line and follows someone everywhere or anywhere. I'm a person who thinks. And I would have probably ended up in a concentration camp in Germany. That's what I've told my girl, my wife, many times. And as the average Hollywood Nazi knows almost nothing about National Socialism, the important parts of National Socialism. The important parts of National Socialism had more to do with the social aspects, racial purity, yes, science, chemistry, air travel, all of those things were far more important, because when you bring it to war, war is not National Socialism, war is not capitalism, war is not communism, war is war. And whenever you involve yourself in war, you're getting into a counterproductive act to your race, unless you're absolutely attacked and there's no way out. Well, I see Spike Lee and Jordan Peele are teaming up on a new movie called The Black Klansman, a crime thriller about the KKK. Baller star John David Washington, Dennis Washington's son, is in negotiations to Top Line and Focus Film about the true story of an African American police cop who infiltrated the KKK, one of those mulattoes, you see. That's the danger of a mulatto. Lee will direct and produce with Peele, Sean McKittrick, Sean Reddick, and Raymond Mansfield of the QC Entertainment, and Jason Blum of Blumhouse Productions are also on board to produce. The movie follows Ron Stallworth, a detective in Colorado Springs, Colorado, who in 1978 answered an ad in a local newspaper seeking new Klan members. He not only gained membership, but rose through the ranks to become the head of the local chapter. Stallworth, who is black, was able to gather all sorts of intelligence by pretending to be a white supremacist on the phone or via other forms of correspondence. This is why the Klan has served its usefulness a long time ago. It's time to go to bed. He sent a white fellow officer in his place for any in-person meetings. During his undercover work, Stallworth managed to sabotage several cross-burnings and other activities of notorious hate groups. Well, all they had to do is call in and tell the people wherever they're going to have their meeting, and if it was a motel or a hotel or some kind of room that they'd rent, they'd get them kicked all out. What, you know, big deal. Charlie Wachtel and David Rabinowitz will adapt the script with Lee and Kevin Wilmot. There you go. New movie. Huh. That guy currently stars in the HBO series Ballers. I don't know what the hell that is. I don't think a movie like that's going to make much money unless they have another uprising and get together like they did in Charlottesville. I don't think people are interested in the Klan anymore. I certainly am not, as a tactical idea. The original Klan was perfect, a great guerrilla outfit. And if it had been kept that way, it would have been remained in power. But it decided to go into politics in the 20s, and most of the people in the Klan in the 20s were not seriously working for the white working class. It became like a lodge, like the Masons. In fact, a lot of the Klan stuff of the 20s was right out of the Masons. So anyhow, they became quite powerful, but there was just a lot of them in the 20s. But they were running around chasing bootleggers and things like that, and spent a lot of their time chasing guys that were beating up on their wives, stuff like that, but not any real struggle going on. In fact, in a lot of cases, they attacked union workers, which was a mistake. Anyhow, but as long as the media can use them, they're going to keep using them and putting them out there, making movies and everything else. Beware the Klan, run for your life. Of course, Hollywood's neo-Bolsheviks will be putting lots of money into this film. Usually Spike Lee has a problem raising money, but I think he'll have plenty of money for this, because I think these Hollywood Bolsheviks get wet in their crotch every time you talk about race. I think they have a sexual thing about it. What do you think? Isn't that like loving the things you hate? there's a lot of psychology in this. That's why millions of people this weekend had their noses glued to the television screen, hoping psychologically to see bodies flying through the air, through the trees, and boats going up in the air, and all that kind of stuff. That, don't tell me they don't, because that's it. It's like these people that always slow down to watch and see what a wreck. They love violence and death, but they'll deny it every time. Also, I can't imagine the Klan in Colorado Springs, Colorado in 1978 being very big. I was in the Klan at the time, or I had just gotten out of it, but I never heard of a Klan over in Colorado. I did hear they had their national convention in a phone booth. This is the kind of stuff they love too. Iowa high school students seen wearing KKK hoods booted off the football team. Now that's national news. May even go international. Well, I guess they're still going after the Southern Millionaires Law Center. They say it's a well-established entity in American politics. Among other things, the nonprofit is known for essentially driving the Ku Klux Klan into bankruptcy. Well, as far as I can recall, they only drove the United Klans of America into bankruptcy. When they went after me, of course, I was not operating as the Klan anymore, but I never went bankrupt. And I know a lot of small Klan groups, they didn't go bankrupt. So essentially, I think it was only one Klan that went bankrupt because of D's. I was told that the United Klans of America, Robert Shelton and his wife, were allowed to keep a certain amount of jewelry when they were forced into bankruptcy, but that's all I know about it. On the whole, I think the Southern Millionaires Law Center has done far more to promote racism than they have done to eliminate racism. They gave racism more publicity than anybody else, caused thousands of young men and women to join up with groups. It's like this Infada. I think the Infada is creating more racists than white racists than many of us have been able to create in a long time. Most of the people that the Southern Millionaires Law Center have gone after didn't have hardly any money at all. They didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. Well, supposedly, the Southern Poverty Law Center raised $50 million, I don't know, that's in the 1 year, I guess, and claimed $328 million in net assets in the last recorded fiscal year. Well, I know they made $7 million in raising funds on aftermath of my trial in Portland, Oregon, $7 bucks. While their clients, my opposition, got peanuts. Of course, with Morris Dees, after the trial is over and all the hoopla is over and all the press is over and all that stuff, he's gone. Forget about it. The SPLC pays its top directors six-figure salaries. Founder Morris Dees took in $337,000 in 2015, according to the watchdog group Charity Navigator. Richard Cohen, he pretty much runs the outfit anyhow, this Jew. The SPLC's president made $333,000 that same year. Meanwhile, fundraising efforts, simply asking supporters for more money, make up the vast preponderance of the group's expenditures. Only a fraction of the SPLC's budget is spent on actual legal fees. They just found this out. I could have told them that 20, 30 years ago. In fact, I did tell them that 20, 30 years ago. Nobody gave a shit. An investigative report by the Washington Free Beacon revealed that the SPLC has millions of dollars stored in offshore bank accounts. Well, just like any other mob figure. The nonprofit's business income tax return indicates it has financial interests in the British Virgin Islands, the Cayman Islands, and Bermuda. They probably own half the damn island. In 2015, the group wired $2.2 million to an account located in the Cayman Islands. The SPLC has previously deposited nearly $1 million to a Cayman Islands account in 2014. The Daily Kos, a notably left-of-center outlet, reported in 2012 that the SPLC boasted $238 million in assets, a portion of which were located in the Bermuda account. The fundraising practices of the SPLC has raised eyebrows for years, as far back as 1994. The Montgomery Advertiser, a local newspaper near their headquarters, ran a scathing series detailing the nonprofit's marketing and financial methods. I remember that. I bought a whole bunch of those papers and distributed them around to a lot of people. The series was so riveting it became a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize. However, Dees utilized his connections with liberal politicians to lobby the Pulitzer Board not to award the prize to the advertiser. SPLC leadership insists there is nothing wrong with their financial practices, just like any rotten politician does. When pressed for comment by Western Journalism, a spokesman relayed an official statement from the group's president. Quote, "It is common for universities, foundations, and other nonprofit organizations to have a portion of their endowments invested in offshore funds. Each such fund in which the Southern Millionaires Law Center is investing is a highly reputable one that is recommended by Cambridge Associates, one of the country's one of the country's leading investment advisory firms for nonprofit institutions, Cohen told the Western Journalism via an email statement. As his nose grows longer, 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 and more hooked. Tickled to death to see the Southern Poverty Law Center going after these phony Christians and people like that, these goody-two-shoes bastards in the right wing. It's about time. Here's somebody that's in real trouble. Attorney with Jerry Moberg and Associates gave $300 to David Duke's failed Senate campaign. James Edwin Baker, an attorney with Jerry Moberg and Associates in Ephrata, Washington, contributed $300 to David Duke's 2016 Senate campaign. Boy, they're taking this guy apart on the internet. Anybody that gives any money to anybody that may be somewhat racial or racial separatists or anything like that, the media and the Hollywood boys and the Bolsheviks are going to just drive them into the ground. I think in the long run that's good to get a lot of these people out of the way that were never really, really on our side. Anyhow, as far as getting anything really done except belonging to the Republican Party and telling nigger jokes at their cocktail parties. This guy will do the typical thing that right-wingers do. They'll try to worm their way out of it and apologize and say, I really didn't mean it. I didn't know who he was. A pox on those kind of people. Incidentally, $300 from that attorney was rumored to have ended up on the crap tables on the gambling casinos on the Mississippi River. One of our associates reminded me, and he really didn't have to remind me, but I haven't talked about it much, and that is weather control. I watched these hurricane charts for a week or so, and it struck me as very odd how this hurricane in Florida was almost mechanically moving up the state, just on the state. I said, that is weird. That is weird how carefully, and even how in the Caribbean it seemed to follow, you know, like Havana and so forth and Cuba. Well, it was only a month or so ago I was watching, there's a Chinese channel now, they have bought CCTV, and it's an interesting channel. They got some very good stuff on there. It's certainly not as trashy as most of the Western type, but it was said on there that China had been using weather control in China for a long time. And it just matter-of-factly said that. And I said, wow. Well, they're using weather control quite a bit, and they've been doing it for a long time, then they have the ability somehow, someplace, to use it destructively. So I stuck it in the back of my mind, but then, like I say, one of our people reminded me that I should mention that. And I'm mentioning it because I think it's where I used to poo-poo it. Years ago, they were talking about it, big time. And then they said it's false flag and this and that, and I sort of put it in the back of my mind. But now I'm a firm believer that there is weather control. They know exactly what they're doing, and they can use it as a weapon. So I don't know how much you studied on this, but when I look at that hurricane moving up Florida, it's just perfectly right, almost perfectly right inside the boundaries of the state. I thought, wow, that sure as hell looks like weather control to me. I think they used it quite a bit in the Middle East. That was Gaddafi's problem, I know that he had hadn't had rainfall for a long time. They'd gone through most of the reserves of wheat and like that. And so in reality, that led to the uprising in his country and ultimately led to his death. And I think that happened in several of those countries over there. First, they employ this type of weather control or some other method of bringing their food supply down, and then naturally that's going to get more people irritated, and more demagogues are able to get people to rally around them and march on the castle. So I think that you're going to find as time goes on that this is a common practice to use it as a sort of like artillery is used to soften up an area and then go in. And so think about it. The biggest reason I think no people don't think much about it is they don't want to be laughed at. Anybody who's talking about weather control a few years ago, I know, was laughed at, and even I ignored it after a while. I found over the years that if there's anything dirty or rotten to happen, any kind of plan, any kind, whether it's electronic or however, gas, chemicals, research, frontal lobotomies, if there's anything rotten and terrible around, this so-called government, which is not a government, it's a gang of criminals, will use, and they have. They keep uncovering this shit from years ago all the time of what they were into and the horrible things this government has done, and then they accuse other people, and the prisons are full of people who haven't done anything one-tenth as bad as these people do in Washington. And I think they're definitely right when they call it the evil empire. This is definitely the leadership of this country can be proven to be the evil empire. We used to chalk it up to, you know, a few bad apples and they should have done that and that type of attitude. But finally, you have to admit how rotten and evil and sick the whole establishment is. And there's nothing going to change that without collapse and struggle. Nothing. I mean, you can vote till your ass falls off. You can listen to all their speeches. You can elect a Republican, a Democrat, or anything else. And it's not going to change because the core power is the military-industrial complex and the banking system and their buddies. And that's the way they want it. And that's the way it's going to be unless you kill them. I'm sorry, boys and girls, I don't want to upset you, but that's the only way it's ever going to end. I didn't turn on my recorder. Let's go back to Might is Right. I feel more comfortable there because it's the truth in spades.
Why then do parents inoculate the plastic minds of their children?
That all such conceptions are a positive handicap in the race for wealth and power. What a witless procedure to teach ideals at home, at school, and at college that we know in our hearts are thoroughgoing lies and then expect nobility of personal conduct to be the resultant. Turn out into the world a young man well-trained in moral principles, and the chances are 99-1 against him. Indeed, the majority of men never win success until they are middle-aged, until they have had time to slough off the false idealisms they began the world with. Unnaturalism has never yet bred a race of heroes and never will. All great races are predatory. The hungry-to-eat-a-man tiger knows that if he first growls out his intentions and then openly bounds up to his intended victim, he will, most probably, get an explosive bullet neatly lodged in his cerebrum. Consequently, he ambushes himself in the shadow of a rock or behind a log and leaps upon his dinner with varying results. It is the same, exactly the same, among carnivorous bipeds. A few of them are tigers, hungry to eat a man, and the rest are tiger's meat, hungry to be eaten. The fact is that civilization's moralisms are wholly ultra-rational, fundamentally unnatural, and utterly inoperative. Christian principles and natural principles mutually antagonize one another. Nature is antichrist. Darwinism is the mortal foe of Hebraism. Nature's command is, be egoist, possess the earth and fight it out. Jesus insists, be altruistic, abandon the world, and love your enemies. Darwin proclaims, all ye are rival carnivores. Be strong, therefore, and bold, and fear nothing. Christ teaches, all ye are dearly beloved brethren. Be obedient, therefore, and good, and fear ghosts. Jesus urges his devotees to pray for deliverance. Darwin gently intimates his heartfelt belief in the law of battle. He who will not work, neither shall he eat, is the apostolic pronunciamento. He who will not fight, neither can he eat, is nature's savage logic. It is more blessed to give than to receive, is the vacuous baby prattle of the pastor. It is more blessed to capture than to receive, is ordinary common sense. He who denies man's right to exploit man impeaches not the conduct of man, but the order of nature. Who then is right, the Anglo-Saxon or the Israelite? The scientist or the oratorical wonder worker? The Western thinker or the Eastern dreamer? Which is the true faith, Japheth's logic or Shem's fabulism? 6. Common sense provides no precise solution of right or wrong. All moral philosophy is false and vain, for man is unlimited. In the realm of ethics, most modern wiselings are fanatical and unreasonable bigots. They really believe that ethical principles are as a house built on a rock, whereas the house is an unfounded hypothesis, and the rock non-existent. Good and evil liveth only in men's minds. They are not realities, but shadows, credos, ghosts, and only the maddest of the mad worship their own shade. What is right? What is wrong? These elemental interrogatories have been asked in every age, and every age formulates replies to suit itself. De facto right and wrong are no more than arbitrary algebraic signs representing hypnagogic fantasies. They are mere symbols emblematic of belated fragments of insolent ecclesiastical crudities. In nature, all developments are essentially one and the same phenomenon, infinitely transfused and intermingled. Good and evil are human inventions born of human foolery, narrowness, and short-sightedness. The organic brain is far too small and too contemptible to completely comprehend what nature is driving at. What appears to be wrong to us may be right in nature, and vice versa. We can no more establish an infallible system of ethics than we can establish infallible systems of religion, philosophy, or politics. All the universe is in a state of flux, and men are but a swarm of querulous, heat-evolved insectivores, living aimlessly on the top of a floating cork that whirls and darts and rolls over and over and over amid the scum and froth and slime of a boiling, bubbling alembic. Within his own sphere, individual man is and ought to be the supreme determinant. Outside of that sphere, he knows absolutely nothing, and philosophy, less than nothing. As for the prophets of futurity from the days of Gautama, Bell, and Ishtar, down to Christ, Muhammad, Peter, Luther, Calvin, and Brigham Young, they have been strident deceivers all, working on the emotional credulity of women and doltish rabbles. A false teacher may be earnestly and honorably sincere in all his theoria, but that does not necessarily demonstrate intrinsic divinity. Many false prophets have been murdered because of their opinions, besides Jesus of Nazareth, Judea, and Smith of Nauvoo, Illinois. The execution of the founder of Mormonism, inspired by political clamor, is an exact parallel to the execution of the founder of Christianity, inspired by priestly clamor. The point is, neither shooting nor crucifixion are satisfactory proofs of divinity or probity. Right and wrong, like up and down, east and west, are relative terms without any fixed or finite meaning. What is good for the goose is not always good for the gander. Newfoundland lies east from Chicago, but west from Berlin. All depends upon the point of view. Consequently, what may be right in one age may, in another age, be wholly wrong. In ancient Rome, it was considered the height of impiety, heresy, and treason for free-born citizens to adore a circumcised Asiatic. But in modern Europe and America, it is considered pious and fashionable and highly commendable to do so. Even what is right to one man under one set of circumstances may be utterly wrong to the same man under a different set of circumstances. Cromwell, as Colonel of the Ironsides, thought regal absolutism the essence of all diabolism. But as President of the Republic, he defended it in himself as a crowning mercy. When government soldiers shoot down American rebels, that is called a glorious victory. But when government soldiers shot colonial rebels during the Red Flag riots, inaugural of the War of Independence, that is conventionally labeled wicked massacre. When a band of rich men plunder the poor, that is business shrewdness, practical statesmanship of financial integrity. But if bands of poor men plunder the rich, that is larceny, burglary, highway robbery, and rebellion. When the Anglo-Saxon invader is cooped up and slaughtered in India, that is mutiny and red-handed murder. But when he mows down the sepoys in battalions or fastens them to the muzzles of cannon and blows them into ribbons, that is upholding the majesty of law and of order. When Cuban guerrillas kill Spaniards, all American papers describe it as war. But when the Spaniards retaliate and kill the Cubans, that is horrible butcheries by General Weyla. Spanish cutthroats are glorified in Spain as dashing heroes, and the Cuban patriots described as brigands, outlaws, and brutal Negro murderers. All depends upon the point of view. Victory sanctifies. In the realm of abstract ethics, there is no other fact upon which the plain man can finally make up his mind. As far as sociology is concerned, ethical principles are decided by the shock of contending armies. Right has always been emblazoned on the standards of victory, and wrong on the draggled rags of lost causes. When Brennus, commander of the ancient Gauls, attacked the Clusians, a Roman ambassador protested, asking, "What offense have the Clusians given you?" Brennus laughed at the question and replied, "Their offense is the refusal they make to divide the country with me. It is the same offense that the people of Alba, the Fidenians, and Arians gave you, and lately the Viennans, the Felici, and the Volsci. To avenge yourselves, you took up arms and washed your injury in their blood. You subdued the people, pillaged their houses, and laid waste their cities and their countries. And in this you did no wrong or injustice. You obeyed the most ancient laws, which gave to the strong the possessions of the weak, the sovereign law of nature that begins with the gods and ends with the animals. Suppress, therefore, O Romans, your pity for the Clusians. Compassion is yet unknown to the Gauls. Do not inspire them with that sentiment, lest they should have compassion upon those you oppress." History is full of similar logic. Brutus, for instance, who poignarded Julius Caesar, his friend and benefactor, has always been held up to public estimation as the noblest Roman of them all, whereas Booth, who slew Abraham Lincoln, is everywhere and at all times spoken of as a malevolent assassin. The operation of the law itself is also an apt illustration of the paradoxical nature of right and wrong. Citizens who break the written law are hauled before judges, inquisitorially cross-examined and chained for long years in state dungeons, but the statesmen and legislatures may sell their country for gold and break every statute, law, and constitution in the land without the least fear of legal intimidation. Indeed, the approbation of the state is all sufficient nowadays to sanctify any crime, even the most abominable. In this particular of granting absolution, the state is gradually supplanting and absorbing the church. The protesters of the past demolished the infallible imperialism of clerics over religio-individual thought, and the Protestantism of the future must demolish the insolent dictatorship of politicals over private judgment and the development of personality. All good Christian men regard the judicial murder of Jesus as a crime of the blackest dye, but they chant church paeans of joy over Jael's murder of Sisera and the assassination of Eglon, king of Moab, etc. It is not very long since Catholic and Protestant idolaters mutually roasted each other alive for the glory of God and the uplifting of his holy name. Each side proclaimed themselves right with rack and thumbscrew and other little instruments of persuasion. Protestants still think it a crime and scandal to worship the mother of their God, but Catholics consider it right and proper to deify the Hebrew maid who remained a maid, what a paradox, after boning a son. To eat pork and beans is frightfully wicked for a Jew, but passable for a cultured Bostonian. To drink whiskey is iniquity to a Turk, but exhilarating to a Scotlander. Roast beef is a goodly dish too, and English barbarian, but famine-stricken Orthodox Hindus die rather than taste thereof. Dueling is honorable in some countries, but dishonorable in others. So also pugilism, private revenge, tyrannicide, bullfighting, regicide, and warfare. The Quakers, anarchists, and young men's Christian associations are unceasingly railing against war and all its horrors, whereas there are not a few benighted infidels, including the author, who regard war as nature's greatest prophylactic. Polygamy is wrong in England and America, but monogamy is righteous, and polyandry right, being licensed by the state. Whereas in Eastern Europe and among all savage tribes, polyandry is iniquity, polygamy, blessedness, and monogamy, vileness. In ancient Lacedaemon, stealing was considered highly meritorious if not found out, as in modern America. Solon places theft among the professions, and he knew what he was doing. Aristotle includes robbery among the different kinds of hunting. There was no hypocrisy about these classical authors. They called a spade, and searched nature, not libraries, for facts. Herein is the secret of their genius and undying renown. If a man steal a horse or a steer, he is lynched, if captured, as an enemy of society. But if he steals the value of a million horses by wrecking a savings bank, he is straightaway made a senator or knighted. It is a criminal act to burglarize another man's house, but it's enlarging our markets to steal Texas from the Mexicans, Alsace and Lorraine from the French, Egypt from the Turks, or Madagascar from the Hovers. The fact is that all the greatest statesmen and kings have been, most commendably, the higher criminals. Wars are marauding expeditions, and all kingships and property originate in warfare. Slay one man in order to rob him, and you are a murderer. Slay a million men in order to rob them, and you are a renowned general. Annex from one person, and you are a felonious ruffian. But annex from the whole population or from rival nations, and you are made Chancellor of the Exchequer, Chairman of Ways and Means, or decorated with the Grand Cross of the Legion of Honor. Maraud direct for your own profit, and you are a heinous rascal. Counterfeiter, forger, bandit, but maraud indirect, on public service only, and you are proclaimed our opulent fellow citizen and distinguished patriot. Take from the peasantry even an infinitesimal proportion of their petty property, and they will lynch you as a lazy, thievish tramp. But take 2/3 of their harvest by law and rule, rent, interest, or tax assessments, and they will turn out in the middle of the night to cheer you in your steam-horsed palace car as it whirls through their god-forsaken villages. To steal the goose from off the common is awful rascality, but to steal the common from the goose is splendid statesmanship. Men who write down holy fables in books are called apostles of God, or canonized as saints, but men who tell regulation lies in the ordinary course of business are popularly supposed to be wicked and ungodly scamps. The delightful storyteller who prints a pleasing yarn, coined out of his alcoholic imagination, is known as a gifted author. But the plain blunt writer who interprets facts and proclaims them openly is an incarnation of iniquity, madness, blasphemy, a veritable Apollyon, Satan. What is one man's meat is another man's poison. Again, he who prevaricates in a pulpit for the glory of God is everywhere known as a doctor of divinity, but he who bears false witness in an ordinary court of justice is universally condemned as a perjured villain. It is questionable if there is one codified crime that would be considered a crime in every land on earth. Just as there are 1,000 different icons and ideals of God, so there are 1,000 mutually repellent views of right and wrong. Every climate, every nation, every community has its own notion of what virtue means. Moral dogmas are manufactured to suit the occasion and are always used as instruments of intimidation. They are not necessarily in harmony with or based upon nature, except in the sense that fraud is natural. Biologically and historically considered, there is nothing either right or wrong, but thinking make it so. Every age and nation must interpret right and wrong for itself. So must every man. It is each man's manifest duty to invent his own ethical credo. If he neglects this duty and supinely, without thinking, adopts the credo of the herd into which he is born, then his individuality is merged and lost. Other men with more personal willpower may then set up fallacious, maladroit dogmas, counterfeit 24-inch gauges, and compel him to conform against his wish. They become rulers and proprietors, while he descends to the position of a dependent or vassal. Here is the permanent menace to freedom that lies embedded in all ethical, political, and religious codes. He who keeps the commandments of another is necessarily the servant of that other. He who curbs his own thought to please a majority has already lost his mental liberty. He who implicitly relies upon public opinion becomes a mere marionette, a bloodless dummy. Professing independence, he is practically a prisoner in his own domain. The pride of life is in deciding and doing, in taking the initiative, not in obeying the dictation of others. He who keeps the commandments is and must always remain a subordinate, in a beggardom of rules and regulations. He who disobeys the commandments becomes himself a commandment maker, that is to say, a ruler over the minds and bodies and property of inferior organisms. Obedience is characteristic of the menial. Disobedience is the stamp of the hero. Man is the measure of all things. Protagoras. He who takes no initiative and determines no issues, however intelligent and trustworthy, plays a subordinate part. All great deeds are the result not of majority votes, but of individual activity. Every man who is free, and freedom means something more than the mere privilege of dropping regulation pieces of print into a majority box, should judge all things by his own personality. He should regard himself as the measuring rod, the determinant, the unit of value, and carefully abstain from blindly adopting other men's measurements without personal verification and reasonable tests. The easiest way for a band of public robbers to plunder a nation is for them to issue counterfeit currency and exchange it for intrinsic values, and the easiest way to enslave a race is to wheedle it into or impose upon it counterfeit ethics, that is to say, fraudulent standards of morality. When the weighing scales or measures are falsified, all subsequent exchange becomes marauding. Then foreclosing bankers become cattle lifters, and machine politicians develop into pirates. Thus it happeneth that the words politician and thief are now interchangeable terms, more especially in America, France, and Australia. Government is the great blackmail. 7. Better far for a free animal to be killed outright than to be mastered, subordinated, and enchained. Mentally, morally, physically, a full-grown man should swear allegiance to no extraneous moralisms, custom, or arbitrary rule of conduct. He ought to take a special pride in developing his own individuality, independent of all other men whatsoever. In the maxim, union is strength, there lies an abiding fallacy. Very often, in practical affairs, he is greatest who stands most apart. Every man for himself is the law of life. Every man for an institution, a god, or a dogma is the law of death. Mind your own business is a line of thought very much neglected in this infirm age, when every sodden degenerate fancies that it is his business to be every other degenerate's keeper, guardian, and nurse. Cain's wrathful retort, "Am I my brother's keeper?" contains a far-reaching practical philosophy that is deserving of calm consideration in the light of contemporary socialistic maladjustments and biological evolutionism. Only the terrorized repent, but non-moralists found families, build cities, rule the earth, and laugh at the gods. Each individual should think as he pleases, as the spirit moves in him, without the least respect for what others think or do, the only limit to his actions being, of course, the materialized opposition he actually meets with, for the strong are the natural limit of the strong. No one is bound to obey another or a majority except the other can coerce obedience, and to do that at all times, under all circumstances, would be terribly troublesome, expensive, and dangerous. When actualized antagonism is met with, it is every dauntless man's business to surmount it, if he can. Should he find that beyond his strength or the massed power of his friends and supporters, then death or submission are the only reasonable alternatives. If he has not the nerve to fall, as the much maligned Catiline fell at Pistoria, then he and his posterity to the third and fourth generation, if he is coerced by superior strength, or strategy into temporary retreat, he then owes no allegiance whatever to his triumphant adversaries, and he should be ever ready, when time and tide seem propitiatory, to overwhelm and destroy the dictation. Get there, I say, get there. Get there at any cost. Be thou a true knight. Save thyself by thine own high deeds. If a man wound you on one cheek, lay him low. Smite him hip and thigh. Self-preservation is the first law of thy being. Hate for hate, ruth for ruth, scorn for scorn, and tooth for tooth. Get there, I say, get there. Get there at any cost. Let him no longer boast of his bravery, who merely weeps with his dear ones, when his dear ones weep for bread. The gallant and the brave have never yet been known to want for anything. Women shed tears, men shed blood. Cowards serve masters, bold men make themselves masters. When passing through the valley of humiliation, slaves and dastards, exposing their sores, sob aloud for consolation and sympathy. Brave men stand apart and ponder vengeance or conquest. The fear of death is the beginning of slavery. Majority box despotism can only be maintained by making a sudden and violent death its final sanction. Civilized men are terrorized at the idea of death, and as long as that is so, those who wield sudden death in the hollow of their hand are masters of the world. Hence a small body of disciplined fighters, if protected by the death penalty, are capable of dominating a nation of 10,000 times their number. Hence also, in accordance with the fight fire with fire principle, all secret associations aiming at the destruction of established tyrannies in church or state have ever been organized from the most ancient times upon a death penalty basis. When successful, these societies become government in their turn, merely reforming as defense forces instead of aggressive forces. On this account, the inner workings of governments are unknown to the outer world. Every ministerial cabinet is oath-bound, and all the higher officials are pledged and obligated under a death penalty to the most strict secrecy. Indeed, under the cover of popular government, the financial empire of the world is an established fact. No man has, or ever had, any inherent right to the use of the earth, nor to personal independence, nor to property, nor to wives, nor to liberty of speech, nor to freedom of thought, nor to anything except he can, by himself or in conjunction with his allies, assert his rights by power. What are, in popular parlance, called rights, are really spoil. The prerogatives of formerly exerted might, but a right lapses immediately when those who are enjoying it become incapable of further maintaining it. Consequently, all rights are as transient as morning rainbows, international treaties or clauses in a temporary armistice. They may be abrogated at any moment by any one of the contracting parties holding the necessary power. Broadly speaking, therefore, might is incarnated right, and rights are metamorphosed mights. Power and justice are synonyms, for might is mighty and does prevail. They who possess the undisputable might, be they 1, 10, or 10 million, may and do proclaim the right. Government is founded on property. Property is founded on conquest. And conquest is founded on power. And power is founded on brain and brawn. On organic animality. Just as parents dictate right to their children, so masterful animals dictate right to millions and millions of sodden-livered, baby-minded men. Monarchic rulers are the gaudy jumping jacks and representative institutions, the tax-gathering mechanism of the mighty ones. Banks and safe deposits are their treasure stores, and armies and navies their sentinels, executioners, and watchmen. There is much to be said for the opinion, writes Professor Huxley, that force effectually and thoroughly used, so as to render further opposition useless, establishes an ownership that should be recognized as soon as possible. Professor Jevons expresses a parallel thought. The first step must be to rid our minds of the idea that there are such things as abstract rights. Spiritual right and moral right cannot possibly be explained because they are merely verbalisms without solid substance. They are not even shadows, for a shadow implies a materialized actuality. It is somewhat difficult to define what is non-existent. That task may be left to university professors and Sunday school divines. They are adepts at clothing their mental nudity in clouds of wondrous verbosity. Right, in its broadest and deepest sense, can be logically defined, however, as the manifestations of solar energy materialized through human thought and then upon battlefields. That is to say, in nature's supreme court, might is victory and victory establishes rightness. Might is cosmic power in chemic operation, and man in his own sphere is heliocentric force on two legs. Might is mighty and must prevail. It does prevail, for verily it is as the law of gravitation. Nay, it is the law of gravitation. 8. All arbitrary rules of right and wrong are insolent invasions of personal liberty. He who would maintain his manhood must ignore them and abandon them, wherever and whenever possible. Except he has investigated them, paralleled them with nature, and without coercion agrees to abide thereby as a modus vivendi. If he accepts them on other conditions as his lifelong load, that is, his funeral. If he is eager to handicap himself or commit suicide, why shouldn't he? That is his own business.
Well, boys and girls, that's all we have time for today, and I would entice you to have a copy of Might is Right on your desk at all times and refer to it every time you start getting soft and thinking like, I have a right. Yeah, and things like that. You need to listen to it, because it'll bring you back into understanding what it's all about. See you tomorrow.
A soundbite from a film, True Detective. You might have seen it. Matthew McConaughey. And the other one, I forgot his name. But anyhow, I thought this was pretty amusing, so I cut the clip out of the film to run it for you.
He's a failure.
And I forgot to tell you, this was these two detectives had gone to this tent revival meeting. They're looking for a guy. But the conversation between the two detectives is very interesting. One is agnostic, maybe atheist, but pretty logically speaking. The other one's sort of nominal Christian, but he's a rounder, he's a whoremonger, he's a drunk. So let's listen to this interplay between these two detectives as they're standing at the back of this crowd out of nowhere's land in a revival tent.
Where is natural?
Parish FD said the church burned down 4 months earlier. No prince put out an APB on Friends of Christ. A week later, they were in Franklin. Revival ministry, old time religion. You can imagine what Mr. Charisma thought of that.
Look at the average IQ that this group is, huh?
Can you see Texas up there on your high horse? What do you know about these people?
Just observation and deduction. See a propensity for obesity, poverty, a yen for fairy tales. Folks putting what few bucks they do have in the little wicker baskets being passed around. I think it's safe to say that nobody here is going to be splitting the atom, Marty.
You see that? Your fucking attitude. Not everybody wants to sit alone in an empty room beating off the murder manuals. Some folks enjoy community, the common good.
Yeah, well, it's the common good's got to make up fairy tales, and it's not good for anybody.
Your sorrows came you to this place. They divide you from what your heart knows. And there are a lot of good hearts out there. I'm looking out there. I'm seeing a lot of good hearts out there. I see a lot of good out there.
I mean, can you imagine if people didn't believe what things they'd get up to?
Exact same thing they do now, just out in the open.
Bullshit. There'd be a fucking freak show of murder and debauchery, and you know it.
If the only thing keeping a person decent is the expectation of divine reward, then, brother, that person is a piece of shit. And I'd like to get as many of them out in the open as possible.
Well, I guess your judgment is infallible, piece of shit-wise.
You think that notebook is a stone tablet? What to say about life? You gotta get together. Tell yourself stories that violate every law of the universe. Just get through the goddamn day. What's that say about your reality, Marty? When you get to talking like this, you sound panicked.
You think it's all a scam, huh? All them folks? They just wrong?
Oh, yeah. Been that way since one monkey looked at the sun and told the other monkey, he said, for you to give me your fucking share. People. So goddamn frail, they'd rather put a coin in a wishing well than buy dinner.
Jesus Christ, your arms open and closed. The echoes of my life can never contain the sea of truth about you. You move the feather in the ash, you touch the leaf with its flames.
Transference of fear and self-loathing to an authoritarian vessel. It's catharsis. He absorbs their dread with his narrative. Because of this, he's effective in proportion to the amount of certainty he can project. Certain linguistic anthropologists think that religion is a language virus that rewrites pathways in the brain, dulls critical thinking.
Well, I don't use $10 words as much as you, but for a guy who sees no point in existence, you sure fret about it an awful lot. And you still sound panicked.
At least I'm not racing to a red light.
Yeah.